Welcome to the Teach, Lead, Innovate podcast, where we dive deep into the heart of innovation, leadership, and transformative ideas shaping the future of education and technology. Each episode is a journey into the minds of visionary educators, thinkers, and leaders who are not just talking about change, they're living it. Real people leading real change. This is where passion meets practice and ideas come to life. Welcome to the Teach, Lead, Innovate podcast. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Teach, Lead, Innovate podcast. I am so excited to welcome the unorthodox principal, Lee M. Ragsdale, a well-known principal, speaker, and author in the Midwest. She is most identified for her larger-than-life personality, unorthodox leadership style, advocacy for teachers and students, and dedication to help leaders reach their full potential. It is her life's mission to empower all educators so that every student experiences the world-class education that they deserve. Lee has served in the public education arena for the past 17 years and is still as energetic as the day she started. She has worked her way up from a teacher's assistant, teacher, assistant principal, head principal, transformational leader, superintendent thought partner, leadership coach, motivational speaker, and consultant. With her extensive knowledge base, she has been able to turn around some of the more at-risk schools and programs in the Midwest. Welcome to the Teach, Lead, Innovate podcast, Lee.
Hey, Dave. Thank you for having me. I am so pumped to be here. Wow. What a great way to start the day.
I'm so excited. So, Lee, you are quite an accomplished educator. What inspired you to get into the field of education in the first place?
So, you know, with a lot of us, I think you go two paths, right? You know exactly what you want to do, or you want to do the opposite, let's just say. So my grandpa George was a principal for 30 years. My mom was an educator. My grandmother was an educator. My aunts were all teachers. My uncle was an assistant principal. So I knew the only thing I never wanted to be was a teacher, for sure. I was going to go complete opposite of that. I still remember my mom was teaching PE pre-K 2, and I was supposed to do like 20 hours of service. And like, she signed off after like 20 minutes and was like, don't come back here. Like, you're worse than my kindergarten students, you know? So I knew that I was not at all going to go into education and then look at where I've, you know, dedicated my life. It just kept, you know, being brought into my life over and over again. I was asked to substitute teach for my crazy uncle. He was a middle school teacher. And I fell in love with that age. And then I was just out of the blue asked to be a dance coach. And then they offered me a job and as a paraprofessional. Back then we called it a teacher's assistant. I had no idea what I was getting myself into. It was at an alternative high school. So here I was like 22 or 23 with 17, 18, 19 year olds on top of a bus garage. I just had no idea what I was signing up for. But by far that experience changed my entire life. Not just my professional life, but my personal life. It opened a part of me that I didn't know existed. I've always had a lot of energy. Always just naturally been kind of a go-getter, but I didn't have kind of that empathy piece or that love really for other people or giving back to the community or someone other than yourself. And they just changed my entire life. And so I did that. I taught, you know, for 10 years, where then I did a ton of service learning, which is a huge passion of mine still today. And then I started applying for principal jobs, and I was an assistant principal in a town. I knew no one, and it was a dream. And my superintendent called me and said, hear me out. I've got the perfect spot for you. You need to be a head principal, and it's at a pre-K through 4 building. And I said, you've got the wrong number, and I hung up on him. And he called me back. He was like, Lee, you just hung up on me. I was like, yeah, because I don't even really like kids, right? Like, I'm a high school person at heart. And he said, just trust me, whatever. So I immediately called my old superintendent. I was like, listen to what they want me to do. And he knew a lot of my former alternative high school students. And he started saying their names to me. And if I would have had them as a kindergartner or as a second grader, you know, could their life have been different? And I just started crying. And I said, you're right. And so that's when I moved into the elementary world, which I was totally freaking born for. Like, I don't know what I was thinking. I mean, I still have high school kids. I still speak to a lot of high school students, but like all the nonsense that I do naturally, like elementary kids and teachers loved it. It was like, this is like, I used to tell people our building was like Disney World because, you know, we just skipped into school every single day. And yeah, our behaviors were, you know, off the rails and a lot of our kids couldn't read or do mathematics, but we got there over time. And then, yeah, my husband got and then that was one school I thought I would die in the seat there. I loved it there so much. And then my superintendent in November of that same year was like, hey, I didn't think you would turn that school around so quickly. I've got another project, which it was another building just a mile down the street and that no one wanted to be associated with or a part of. And I really knew deep down that that's where I would end up because that's a lot of my high school kids. When I was at the high school, that was their elementary school. And so a part of me already felt connected to that school and that community. And it was a dream. And it was a true turnaround school. We were the bottom nine in the state, but we got to work. We transformed that school in record speed, and people wanted to be in our building. People were trying to get in like crazy to see what we were doing. And then COVID happened, and then my husband got relocated. He's full-time for the military, and so we moved. So I worked for the University of Missouri in Columbia, Mizzou, with some of their at-risk athletes. And then we took a huge risk and moved back to my hometown, which was a pre-K-2 building, about 800 students, and I was there, and then just recently decided to take a risk and go out on my own. So it's been a windy, crazy road. I'm sure you're like, I did not sign up for that, but that just kind of gives you a little, you know, little areas of my life which has brought me to where I am today. So
that's awesome. And I thank you for sharing that. I think when it comes to the elementary thing, coming from the secondary level myself, I was a high school teacher, high social studies teacher, and then high school vice principal. The thought of going to elementary was definitely nerve-wracking, but once I got there, I was like, wow, this is amazing. It is heaven. It's wonderful. So thank you for sharing that, Lee. What I love about your social media posts is that they seem to really reflect your bold, tell like it is personality. You always keep it real. And so I have some questions for you. From your perspective, What are some of the biggest challenges facing the education profession today? Big question.
Dave, I don't think we have enough time for me to answer that today, but
let's narrow it. You're going to get narrowing.
So, you know, something I'll never, ever, ever back down from or away from is teacher pay. I think that, you know, our teachers literally mold and form our youth, our future every single day, yet their pay does not even come close to being comparable to the hours that they work, you know, the amount that they spent to get the degrees that they have. Most of the teachers that I have worked alongside for years have always had second or third side hustle jobs. So first off, how are we supposed to be the best for our kids if we're not the best for our teachers first? And I've said that for years. You cannot say, I used to be in a school years ago, we do what's best for kids. We do what's best for kids. And I'm like, yeah, but you can't say that without saying we do what's best for kids because we do what's best for our teachers first. And so I think until we get that right, I mean, I was talking to somebody the other day that said their kid is in first grade and November, their teacher walked out and never walked back in the building. I mean, that was unheard of years ago, right? And it's happening, you know, all around us. And that is scary, first off. I mean, that's scary because, I mean, like I said, I came from a family of teachers. I fell in love with being a teacher. I love and advocate for teachers. So I think that's our first issue right there is, okay, we can dance around to everything else, but at the end of the day, if I can go down to a local tavern and sling beers for more than what I could make working at the elementary school for 3 to 4 days a week with zero stress and parents cussing me out and principals micromanaging me, guess what? I'm going to go sling beers, you know? And I think that that's kind of the mentality. Our teachers have had enough. And I think then that's hard for principals, because then principals are trying, and I know this because I work with so many of them, to create ways to, they can't give raises, right? Our principals can't get raises. A lot of times, you know, our superintendents can't give raises. Our board, like, you know, there's a ripple effect. I'm aware of that. So then these principals are killing themselves to try and then provide this environment for teachers. And then they're getting burned out. And then they're leaving because they're the same way. And so that is a major issue that I can't not talk about, or it wouldn't be, you know, who I am. Second, I think that higher ed has a major problem with trying to push out these teachers. Because we're in a teacher shortage. So instead of this high quality experience that they get, like what I've seen is, you know, everything that's trendy, right? So it's like, we're going to trauma-informed practice, which I'm a big believer in trauma-informed practices. I don't believe that that is a buzzword. I think that society has made it a buzzword. But since we're doing that, then we're going to get rid of like classroom management. We're going to get rid of this, and we're just going to have a free-for-all and no consequences and this. And that's not the truth. But that's the truth when you have these young teachers who are inundated by a phone, who watch a 30-second video of who knows if that's a real teacher or not. They listen to that person, and then they all of a sudden change maybe their mindset or philosophy. And so some of that deep-rooted good teaching is good teaching. It is a craft, right? It is something that you work on for years to develop. It has really gone away. And that to me is scary as well, because you've got these veteran teachers who are trying to help younger teachers. You've got younger teachers who have great ideas, right? And are super energetic and excited. But, you know, then you kind of have this, you know, the clashing of both worlds. And it's like, if you don't have a strong leader in your building to harness both and make both of them feel empowered to work together, then, you know, you kind of have people working in silos again, which is what we try to get away from. And so it's that. And then obviously the home dynamic has changed. I mean, we can't not say that. Like, the home dynamic has changed. Kids are on these. You go to a restaurant, oh, this kid's so well behaved because they're on this. Not because they've taught to sit there, you know, quietly and learn how to interact with a server and their family and whomever's at dinner. It's because we throw this in their face, and then when we want them to engage and they don't get their way, then we see this explosive behavior that we're dealing with. And so, you know, education in our country right now is a tough place, but there's always light at the end of the tunnel. There's always hope, because it's that important.
I completely agree. And I think that that's key, is to remember that there is that hope, because it can be good times from a leadership perspective, from a teacher perspective, where it goes, yikes, this is hard. And it is. It is significantly more difficult these days to be an educator. But again, I think, you know, there's certain things that we have to start really hunkering down and focusing in as a country. So in your opinion, and you kind of talked about this a little bit earlier, what do you think are the key components of a great school, a place where students and staff both want to be, where you have the kids rushing in the morning? What does that look like?
Oh, I know exactly what it looks like, because I lived that dream for so many years. So, you know, I believe to my core that any strong, loving, safe, effective, successful school starts with sense of belonging and how people feel when they are in the presence of your school. And not just the students. I mean, your students, your staff, and your families, and your community. It really takes a village, and how we treat every single heartbeat under the roof is how we get that. And so when I was in a school many years ago, like I said, the discipline was, we were, you know, in trouble with the state because our numbers were so high for out of school suspension, you know, and some like half day kids. I don't even know. We got rid of all of that. But it started with the teachers first. See, that's the thing. A lot of times people want to push all this stuff on the teachers to do for the kids, but we flip the script. So we made it extremely trauma-informed for our teachers first, and we revisited our master schedule. We made sure they had enough prep time. We made sure that they didn't have to make the decision, do I go to the bathroom or do I eat today? We made sure that there were safe places throughout the building when we did have a student that we had to restrain, or which we did very, very rarely. But we had a safe space for that teacher to go to regulate. But we used those spaces so those our teachers felt that it was part of our everyday routine of what we did, what we needed to do every day to keep our teachers regulated and our students regulated, which was a lot of work on me as the principal, my reading team, my counselors, my admin assistant. You know, we ran a very skeleton crew so we could take care of our teachers first, and it worked. But what a good school, I mean, I'm a huge believer in project-based learning because I believe that we have to teach kids that awareness when there are problems in our community and problems in our world, that they're problem solvers and they're world changers, like 5 years old, like not this is our future, like our future is now. And when kids start thinking like that now, they will change. And so when you talk to a five-year-old about being an entrepreneur and writing a letter to an investor, which happens to be their parent, because they want to have a food truck Friday project, whatever, next thing you know, you're expanding their vocabulary. They're talking about investors, entrepreneurs. They're writing more than they ever thought, right? When you have a trade show and you've got, I had a kid who used to hustle hand massages for $1.50 a minute. And I would just sit there, right? Like, that's true hustle. And, you know, but every student was greeted. Every student and staff member were greeted by an adult. And I don't mean a duty teacher that's standing there at the clipboard. I mean, eyes on them, you know, my hands on their face. Like, oh, I love you. I'm so happy you're here. Our school is not complete without you. I knew if a kid, if his person was the nurse and he came in, I said, do you need to eat breakfast with the nurse this morning, right? It was an immediate pulse check to just change the path of their day in seconds. And something that I believe is the way we talk to ourselves matter. And so every elementary building I've been in, we do a school-wide meeting for 10 minutes. And it is with things that I have created, and a lot of schools are like, well, share what you say. It's not the point or the thing that, oh, these are my words, but that's what I need as a leader. I don't cookie cutter anything. I don't want anybody to be just like me. I don't want to be anything, you know, just like you, Dave. Am I going to learn from you and stretch and grow? Absolutely. But to just, I'm so over if I gave them this script that they would read what I said. But when I say so fabulous and flip my hair and the whole school, 800 kids do that every single morning, that's because that's important to me. That's my passion. And that's something that I hold very dear to my heart. But we got rid of all the big matrix and things that kids didn't even know what they meant. Like loitering was like a word that we use. I'm like, my kids think they're working on like and the. They don't know loiter, right? But they know what kindness is, and they know kind words and kind actions. They know what it means to keep their hands to themselves because we practice it every single day. And because of that, your discipline goes down because they police each other, because they'll say, that's not kind, or you're a champion, or get your head up, or your shoulders are supposed to be back. We walk with our shoulders back and our heads held high everywhere we go because we're world changers. And when you have 5, 6, 7, and 8-year-olds saying that to their peers, you know the work is done.
Yeah, that's big.
What
sticks out to me, and, you know, just from your interaction with the students, the teachers, is, again, I always go back to this, the power of relationships. It's key. And everything you're saying is that is at the forefront.
Without a doubt. And I think that is something that is, you know, like I talked about, that craft and those skills that those teachers, you know, worked on. I worked with a teacher, Stacy Stapleton, that, in my opinion, walked on water, and she had some of the hardest kids, and every kid had a nickname based on them after. And it wasn't just like she came in one day and was like, okay, you have a nickname and you have a nickname. It developed over time and it was special to them. And the way she could build relationships with kids was to watch it would bring you just to tears because her demeanor was like this all the time. She didn't have to be, you know, crazy and scooping up and everything like that, like I do, right? Like her craft was this calm personal presence that kids just melted into to her. And that's what we want, is to see that craft. And then those teachers who have that craft, that to just be poured into, right? And to just get better and better at that. And then share with our younger people. And then sometimes, you know, it's the awareness of some of our greatest teachers don't even know their greatness. So as a leader, it's very important to pull that out of them. And the only reason I know that is because I had principals do that to me as a teacher. And so I just recreate what they did to me, right? And they built me up. They made me lead when I didn't want to lead. And they made me do things that I would say, I'm not doing that. And they were like, yeah, you are, you're ready or whatever. And that builds capacity, right? So now you've got a building of leaders. I always say build your team so strong, you don't ever know who the leader of the pack is, right? Like get it, because you are such a strong army of people.
That is a wonderful, wonderful piece of advice there. So I've already heard you say the word community already a few times. So my question is, how do you think schools can do better in reaching out and engaging the community? Because that's also a challenge these days for many.
Yeah. So, you know, I want to say that it's hard. Like everything we did in every single building was hard, right? And I say we because it took a team of people. Mm-hmm. I just had to kind of be the face of it. I always said, you know, it's kind of exhausting sometimes being the show pony because, you know, it was such a team effort. But then at the end of the day, a lot of people, when you're the leader of the building, you have to be that person even when you don't want to be. And it's really never about you. It's about everyone else. And connecting with your community, to me, is a pivotal point for the success of schools. And schools so many times become a parasite where they just want things, right? And we know that schools need things, but they want money. They need sponsorships. We're fundraising. We're selling candy bars and cookies and having this night and bring a dollar. And it's like, we need to be a partnership. So if we're asking our community to do these things for us, then we need to be asking the community, what can we do to support you? And so that is where, you know, I'm a huge believer in service learning. Without a doubt, that's like one of my top five. I don't use the word non-negotiable because that's like a fear-based word, but that's one of my core values of who I am is service learning and teaching kids to give back to their community, not to check a box to do 20 hours, but something meaningful. And people thought I was nuts. We had a service learning day where K-4, every kid left campus. And we did a service learning project throughout our community based on grade level interest. So people are, what do you mean? So like kindergarten, they were struggling because like kindergarten, you know, they kind of don't even know like what day it is or what planet it is, right? You know, they're just like, whatever, I'm here, take care of me. And so one of them decided like they wanted to do something for we had a news station in our community because they keep us safe. We'd had some bad weather. And they said they keep us safe and they make sure if we need to seek shelter of a tornado that we know. And so what can we do for them? And so they wrote letters and we got them in front of the green screen and they did like newscast and we, you know, shared it with them and they came to the, you know, the news station, whatever, first grade. First grade was our strongest group. They loved the elderly community. So they all made signs around their necks that, will you read with me? Will you play a game with me? Whatever. And they had to learn the game, practice the book. And we went to local like retirement homes and they would sit with, you know, our elderly community and do those things. Our second graders, they loved, like they were true like caregivers. So they went to a local daycare and read to students. And then our third grade, that was a struggle. They were crazy, all of them. But we realized they had this passion for animals. And so they created dog treats and dog toys during Emerging Engineers and took them to the local Humane Society. And here's what's key. They made 78 of those toys. I still remember this. It's been like 4 or 5 years ago. And my kids who are in my office all the time, they came to me. They said, Miss Lee, we've got to go make more toys. I said, why? They said, there were 5 dogs that we didn't have enough toys for. So there were 5 dogs that didn't get it. And they can't be left out. And to me, they knew what that felt like. They knew what it felt like to be the outsider. They knew what it felt like to miss the parties before I got there. They knew what it was like to be in the hallway. They knew. And so I said, yeah, we'll do that right now. I stopped everything. We started making dog toys, and I delivered them that afternoon. And it's those things right there that you can't like quantify or whatever that's called with the data, right? But it's those experiences that you know what you're doing is working. And so by doing those things in your community, then they still want to reach out to you. And we did two a year. My first grade also went to the homeless shelter and put out all the cots and made all of the bags with all the toiletries in them and helped prep a meal. And, you know, we did a ton of other things, but, you know, it shows our community that we care, and we can care at 5, 6, 7, 8 years old. It also showed my teachers what we had in our community that they didn't even know that there was a need. And so it's just full circle, really. You know, again, it's that power of relationships, power of the full circle, taking care of your neighbor, focusing in your backyard first. And that is what changes communities, which then change the school.
100%. It really seems like a shift to from this idea that the school exists within the community to the school is a partner in the community and is also providing value to the community. And it's and you're right, like the community is going to be even more willing and wanting to assist the school because they're partners. Wow, thank you for sharing that, Lee.
So something else, though, with project-based learning that I think is important, too, it's when you reach out to your community, not just for monetary things, right? Like we want like experts in our building. So like we shifted all of that. I do believe that the school is the heartbeat of the community. And this last school I was in, we had a huge attendance area. And so we've got big lake communities around here. So kids are like living in like campers with no indoor plumbing and stuff. And I had to do a home visit. And so my home visit, by the time I put it in like whatever my phone, it was 48 minutes one way there. Now, to get other additional resources, it was an additional 18 miles from where we currently were as the school. And so I was like, we can't, this is not okay, right? And we don't even know where these people are coming. Maybe there's people further out than what I'm just even doing this home visit. And so we created something called a family resource hub. And so I went with a team of people. We stopped at all of the different organizations and agencies that help support our families and our community and introduced ourselves like it was after COVID, right? And we were like, can we bring what you do to our school? And then I want to know when I meet Mary at East Missouri Action Agency or wherever we are, that when I meet with this mom, I'm going to tell this mom, go see Mary and tell Miss Lee sent you to go see Mary. So then that person has a responsibility, but they're not going in there, you know, completely unaware and blind. They're saying, Miss Lee sent me, where's Mary, right? And then we had everything in there. I got printers in there and computers because I had a mom who was mentally and physically abused, and she was trying to apply for a job on her phone because she couldn't on her tablet at home. And her phone was all busted because her psychopath, you know, husband had crashed in or whatever. And, you know, she was telling me how down she was. This was months later. And I said, well, you know that we created that space because of your situation. One of many, but one, you sitting in there, you can now drop your kids off from school, go in there and apply for any job you want. There's a phone, there's a fax machine. You can use the address. I don't really care. And, you know, it because if we say we're the heartbeats and we have to follow through, you know, I always say, don't talk about it, be about it. So we could talk about how glorious a space like this would be, or we could do it. And we did it. And it, you know, we would only push jobs that were hiring like immediately. I didn't want it to be this stagnant place with brochures and things like that. We had the community college come in. We had a full blown a community expo for our kids, and all of the fall sports backed their registration data, because that's something else that you probably know a lot about, is like if kids who live in poverty don't have social capital. So like when their parents think about signing them up for like football, when do you think of football, right? August, September. Well, you have to sign up in like May. And our families didn't know that. Well, that's really not their fault, right? And so all of the local organizations from City League to the, you know, more competitive bumped it back. So when we did our back to school block party, they got to sign up for intramural sports, community, you know, softball league, flag football, everything like that. And the guy who's run our flag football here in the community for, I think, 27 years said it's the most kids that they'd ever had and the most success. And because, you know, but now those parents and families have that social capital because they've been on a team with somebody. So they're not going to miss the deadline because somebody's going to pick up the phone and say, hey, did you see registration is whenever? And so just things like that, too, are so important for just, you know, communicating and educating and connecting the school and the community. I'm obviously very passionate about that. Sorry, Dave.
No, don't be sorry. And what I love that you said was heartbeat, like really the heart to become that heartbeat of the community. That's what has to happen. Amazing. So I want to go back for a second to the sort of the work environment. Okay. If you could provide one or two pieces of advice that you could offer to school principals to help them create better working environments for their staff, what would it be?
Ask questions for improvement. Listen, be an active listener, and then take action around that. And that is not difficult to do. Every new school I've been in, I send out a survey July 1st saying, I'm not emotionally tied to anything within your school because I don't even know who you are, right? But I want to know about you as a person, you as a teacher, you as a human being, right? And then I would always send a survey on professional development and a survey on current programs and systems in place, right? Of what, where we were to get a pulse on our building. And as soon as I would send those out, I'd always say, now, I do not fill out those forms. I don't fill out forms if I think they're stupid or if I don't think people read them. So I made it. I always told them I would never make this more than about 5 minutes to fill out. And I'm never putting things on here that I don't really care to know the answer to because I wouldn't fill that out. Trust, I was in trouble all the time with it. And so they knew that. I told them that, right? Like, I was honest. Like, I wouldn't fill this out if I thought it was stupid. And so I would create, to me, these meaningful, to me, it was worth its weight in gold. And then I would just start chipping away. That's how I would, you know, develop my building goals and vision and start developing a team. Okay, these people are really, you know, seeking professional development in this. These people really want to go off campus because they haven't been. And then what I would do is I would start, you know, putting together the puzzle, you know, the puzzle, and then I would communicate it out. This year, we had 87% of our staff go off campus. The only reason we weren't at 100 is because special education already had a district-wide in-service that they had to do. I had one of our moms, her son was graduating from the Marines. Another one had a sick kid throwing up, blah, blah, blah. That was our 87%. My goal was to have 100% at the end of 3 years. So that was fine. But my teachers knew where we were, which was so important because not that they needed to celebrate that, who really gives a hoot, but they knew, wow, 87% of our staff, you know, went off campus for professional development this year and saw other schools outside of our county. They could talk about that in the community, right? Didn't they? They had pride because why? Their voice mattered. They said, you know, PBS is really tired. You know, we need a refresh, which I was like, thank goodness, because I was getting rid of that anyway. But I said, okay, then here's what we're going to do. Here's some universal practices. We're going to try, you know, a more restorative trauma-informed approach, and this is how it's going to look. Once again, their voices were heard. And when you struggle, you tell them. When we succeed, you tell them. I mean, it's all about communication. It's all about empowering. It's, you know, principals also have to know their people. That's something that I was very blessed with when I was in Cape Girardeau. I had a superintendent who believed in me relentlessly as a leader. And so he forced me to do like anything from Dale Carnegie class to, you know, I was in a Dale Carnegie intensive course to this outdoor leadership experience where I'm wearing like a headlamp in the woods, like orienteering people to the watercolors test, to the Kobe personality test, to this. And at the time, I was like, how am I doing all of this? But what I realized, yes, was I learning about me as a leader, of course, but I was around so many people who were nothing like me at all. And I had to figure out ways to coexist with them, love them, nurture them, give them what they needed. And so then when I started leading schools, I would just fall back into that heart space of this person and I are totally different, but it has nothing to do with me at all. But I have to treat them differently because their anxiety is through the damn roof, right? And if I don't tell them where we're meeting because I want to have a surprise for the 90%, this 10% is going to lose their minds because they don't know where our meeting is, right? Like I would have not known that without that. So I think that personal development is so crucial for our principals today because so many people, I think, take it personal when teachers disagree or teachers seem resistant. And a lot of times, it really has nothing at all to do with that or to do with you as the leader. It can be past experience. It could be just personality type. And once you learn that, realize that, everyone gets along so much better. And I mean, my retention rate for my staff was, it was insane. I mean, 1 year is 100%, 98%. And that was just the right move for someone. She was like, I feel like I need to go to the alt school. And I mentored her. And I said, I feel like you do too. And another one that I mentored had been dying to go to pre-K and a pre-K open. I said, you've got to take that. But so I consider that 100% because they were in places that they were happy. They weren't leaving because they were unhappy, but they were seeking something that made them happy. And when you know your people, you can have those conversations with them.
Absolutely. And empower them to do things and be and move beyond as well to have them grow. We don't want stagnancy. We want them to continue to progress and move on. So Lee, now as a speaker and a consultant, what are the most common challenges schools and educational institutions seek your consultancy for?
So for the most part, and I actually prefer this, it's been more of the speaking, the keynote piece, which I love just because I am fast and furious and I want to give them this robust hour and a half where they leave, you know, so fired up that they are just ready to go conquer the world. That's definitely my jam. You know, what's crazy is a lot of people see one side of me, which is kind of the, you know, the hard truth, kind of the bull in the china shop. But strategic planning is actually something that I love doing because I love that big picture of, okay, this is where we want to be and how are we going to work our tails off all the way to get to that and then celebrate it, you know? That's because I obviously have gone through bond issues and this past year, even though I wasn't there, you know, a $5 million aquatic center was just built in the poorest town of Cape Girardeau. And we walk the streets to get votes for that. So it's those things too, that get me out of bed because it's the right thing to do. But, you know, a lot of it is just the culture and climate of the building, really empowering teachers. I just did a school is shutting down. I was just there last Friday. They're heartbroken, you know, and I said, what I won't do is offer you toxic positivity. I don't believe in toxic positivity, but I will tell you the truth. And the truth is that you will get through it. We will get through it. The truth is that you have the most important job on the planet. And the truth is how you handle yourself from now until June will affect every aspect of your life. And I said, you know, so many times I hear people say, I'm just a teacher. I'm just a teacher. And I made them say, I will never say I'm just a teacher ever again, because they are freaking world changers and they do a job that no one on the planet really even wants to do, right? And they made that commitment to themselves, you know, not to me, but to themselves. And so a lot of it is just really igniting that passion within. And, you know, I want to do that for kids, but I think if you do that for kids, it has to start with teachers. Teachers have to feel that passion, you know, in their gut to get up every day and do what they do to be the best for kids. And so I want to, you know, I want to do that for teachers and for principals. And a lot of times I throw a lot of shade on principals sometimes when I speak, not intentionally, but when I'm talking about changes that we made within our school, sometimes it throws some shade, but hopefully that's a learning experience for principals too. But I would definitely say that, and then behavior, student behavior is a hot button issue. And, you know, that's my jam too, even though when I was a head principal and most of the time here in Missouri, like the AP usually does the discipline. But as the principal, I always would do as much discipline as I could, which is where to me, the unorthodox comes in to play, the unorthodox principal, because some of the things I did were very unorthodox. I mean, I probably would have been fired now to do it like that today with like social media and everything like that. But my families, though, had my back so much that I would call them. I'm like, hey, this is what I think I'm going to do. And this is why. And I'm telling them, I don't want them to be 17, 18 years old. And then they don't get to see Miss Lee and they don't get mm-hmm. to see mom. They get to see the big guys, right? And they would be like, do whatever you want, you know? And because of that and that relationship and that partnership, you know, when I was in the school, I was saying we were the bottom nine of the state. We decreased discipline 86.7% in 1 year.
Wow. It's a big number.
It's a huge number. And thank God for my counselor. Well, yeah. I mean, we had kids running the building. We would say, we got a runner. I'm like, well, you did what? We got a runner. I'm like, well, we're not doing that anymore. Nope. We're not doing that. You know? But we started treating kids like human beings and started treating teachers like human beings. And it's crazy. The results are amazing.
Right. And something that you said that I love was that, you know, the message was, you know, it's not, you're just a teacher. And that drives me crazy because I hear sometimes, oh, I'm just an aide. I'm just a paraprofessional. I'm just a secretary. No, everyone plays such a key role for kids. And that thinking is just, I'm glad that that's your message, because that's a message that needs to be spread far and wide. So Lee, if someone were interested in contacting you about your services, how should they do so?
They could just go to my website. So we have a website, theunorthodoxprincipal.com. You know, that's a work in progress. Like I said, I'm not the techiest person out there in the world, but theunorthodoxprincipal.com. I also have the Unorthodox Principal Facebook group that I started a few months ago. And we now have like over 9,000 community members there, which is super awesome. And I also do Cheers to Teachers, which is to uplift and support and celebrate our educators. So any educator can join that. I even have families and, you know, parents who join that. And then I'm actually starting webinars just so I can be more accessible to my principals, because, you know, sometimes they, you know, traveling, leaving your building, you know what that's like. You come back, there's amount of work. It seems like it's not worth it. And so I'm like, okay, how could I take this problem that I know I faced as a principal and create a solution, but not a solution that's like 4 to 6 hours. Like I'm not about that life. Like 45 minutes of on fire PD that you can walk out of your office and you can implement it right there if you want to. And so that's exciting. That's awesome. That actually launches tomorrow. So.
Outstanding. You understand, you get it, being cognizant of that practical PD that can be delivered quickly and then actually applied. Outstanding. Lee, I want to sincerely thank you for being on the podcast today. Thank you for all that you do for teachers, principals, all educators out there. Thank you for your no-nonsense approach. Please keep on leading that much needed change.
Thank you, Dave, for having me. This has been great, and let's stay in contact. I appreciate it so much.
Absolutely, for sure. All right, everyone, until we meet again, stay inspired, stay positive, and have the best day ever.